This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. I am your host. As always, you can listen to us on the radio dial 92.9 FM 680 AM, but we are now streaming live on YouTube, on Twitch, and on X, the Everything app. You can go and live stream us anytime, anywhere, at either of, or you should say any of those locations. George Ruggiero is the producer of the program. You can follow him on the Everything app at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good afternoon. Jeffrey, how's it going?
It goes well. If I could actually connect to our Google Meet and
trivia this morning was
just electric,
phenomenal.
I mean, just
A
I mean,
plus work.
I had big game nerves. Big game nerves.
I was surprised you said you were not going to get the noodling one. That's the one I was like, oh,
yep.
I know that one straight up.
Nope, I know you find this hard to believe.
Not a fisherman?
Not an outdoorsman. Not an outdoorsman. Got no problem if for everyone that is into that. It has never appealed to me. I don't think I have the attention span for it. My company is every Thursday on the program. He writes about college football and college basketball for CBS Sports. Follow him on the Everything app at David W. Cobb. Cobb, good day, sir.
Hey, guess this is our last time. I kind of bittersweet.
Yeah, our last time at this time, I don't know. We're having internet issues. I don't know if it's us. I don't know if it's you.
Yeah,
Can you hear me? Testing, testing. 1, 2, 3.
The picture of Cobb is
not great.
Frozen.
Not our best.
Me. No.
What about now?
We can kind of hear you now.
Okay.
Hey, you sounded better there.
Yeah,
there you go.
I'll do my best.
All right.
Okay.
I have no idea what's going on with the internet at my house. I have the router still functions. Like, all the lights are as they should be. The line from the utility, the fiber cable to the utility pole is connected. There's no disconnection between the box, you know, that connects to the internet and when you try to connect to the Wi-Fi network, it doesn't even show up on the list.
You have more home utility problems than anyone I know. I mean, between your satellite dish, your internet. I mean, do you have running water?
Fairness, my satellite dish is quite... I had the issue of getting the satellite dish installed, and then I just simply wouldn't take no for an answer and found a hero. Shout out to Robert of DirecTV Installation, and he got the job done. This is why I would be having a massive panic attack.
With Ole Miss playing tonight, if you were a streaming TV user and you needed your internet to come through for you tonight.
Just the playoff, everything. Like, listen, I'm not saying, I have no idea how the rest of this fan base is handling it, but my wife is like at a nervous level I've never seen her in our entire marriage.
Does she watch the games like regularly throughout the season, or is this
she is a legitimate fan. Now,
okay,
she's very much like Calkins. She can't watch the game if it's like close. So like last week, she made it through the first half. Ole Miss got the quick three and out on defense, and then remember they went for it on fourth down near midfield and didn't get it. After that fourth and one, she's like, I can't. She went down, went to bed. She did not know that Ole Miss won the game until I came and woke her up telling her that they had won the game because she couldn't take it.
So she's a little too emotionally invested then. Okay.
Correct. So she's like that. This is how I kind of know that I have forever dropped it. I'm excited just to watch these games the next 2 days. But like I've woken up with like no like nerves or anything. I'm just kind of excited because I think they're going to be good games.
I mean, playing with house money. Ole Miss is in the freaking semifinal of the college football playoffs.
So well, this is a fan base that's not built for this.
No. So, I mean, what are you guys doing? This is a special occasion. You getting pizza?
I was like, hey, is there like a meal that you associate with watching games? You know, and she's like, well, it's like a soft pretzel that she used to get at the games. And I was like, okay, well, I can get a Auntie Annie's or whatever it is, like the, so I can go to Wolf Chase and get you one of those. And she's like, well, no, that's not it. So I just announced to her, I am just grabbing pizza and wings tonight.
Well, you know, you could always go with that Little Caesars pretzel crust. So then you get the best of both worlds.
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking MPC tonight.
Okay. Yeah, Memphis Pizza Cafe. Yeah, that's a good call. It's kind of weird, the game. I don't want to say it starts early, but 6:30 is not your normal.
Do we know?
Like, it's not a time slot that I'm used to. You know?
Is this thing kicking off at 6? Like, are we saying, is this thing kicking off at 6:30? I'm even saying 6:37. I know it's not kicking off at 6:30, but like, that's the other thing I've worried about. Like, is this really a 7 o'clock kickoff or like a 6:55 kickoff? Like, if it's 6:37, that's fine with them announcing it as 6:30.
Yeah, well, that's actually a great point. But the later, the better, Jeffrey, because I don't know how it is for y'all with bedtime right now, but our bedtime is around 7. So if we could push kick to 7:15, actually, that would be preferable because I don't want to miss a second of this game. Now, what I'll end up doing...
When you're saying bedtime, for us, 7 o'clock kicks off Bath. Like Bath starts at 7, and then, like, if she's down by 8, it's a victory.
Right. So it kind of depends on how things went during the day. If she got a good nap during the day, sometimes we have to wait till 7:30. But, I mean, hopefully she gets a terrible nap today. She'll be ready to go to sleep at 7, you know?
Yeah, that would be massive. Because, again, we'll talk about those in just a minute. But I kind of want to get your thoughts on this. All right. So for everybody, the show today, it's our last Thursday with Cobb from 2 to 4. Cobb will be with us every other Thursday. Although, spoiler alert, Cobb, our Thursday show next week, 30 minutes, because the Grizzlies will be playing in Europe, and pregame will start at 12:30 next week. Tip off with Eric at 1 p.m. Central Time.
So we'll talk to Eric about it, but is he going?
He is not.
Okay.
So he's remote broadcasting.
Okay. All right. Well, okay. I'll be ready. 30 minutes. I'll be ready to go.
So we will have that next week, but then we will be from 12 to 3. So Eric's going to join us here in the next segment. We'll get into the list during hour number 2. I want to get Cobb's thoughts on the Damon Williams situation, because I'm kind of the opinion, I don't think this is as big of a deal as it's getting made into, but his agent did drop him today.
Well, because his agent is
also Jed Fish's. It's Jed Fish's agent. And even if Damon Williams is making, let's say he makes $4 or $5 million this year, he is not making Jed Fish money.
Yeah, exactly right. So yeah, that's a messy situation.
But
to say the least.
I don't understand how this is any different than who's the Miami DB that was at Wisconsin. He's going to play tonight.
Yeah, Xavier Lucas.
Yeah, how's this any different?
That's what I'm saying. Maybe it's a more high profile player. That's the difference.
Okay. So we'll talk about that and more during hour number 2. Jason Smith's going to join us around 2:35. Wow, what a playoff game for Jason. I mean, all the stakes on the line. His Bears, like, you basically got everything you wanted out of this season. You needed to hit on the new head coach, Ben Johnson. Check. You wanted to see your quarterback, like, solidify himself that he's the guy. Check. Here come the Packers.
Yeah.
Just to ruin it all. So we'll talk about that with Jason and more. We'll tell your story, and then we'll get out of here. All right, here's what I want to discuss with you. Is it weird now with Ja Morant?
Okay, tell me more. Like where you're going? Where are you coming from?
So
when you say that
again. I need to be clear. I'm speculating, but I'm speculating and I don't think I'm wrong. I think Ja Morant has been the one making the decision not to play these games recently. And if you've actually paid attention, I believe maybe not yesterday, but I think before the Spurs game, I think he was actually listed as probable, then got downgraded to questionable, and then did not play. Okay, back to back, you can kind of talk yourself into, all right, he probably wasn't going to play both, but maybe that means he'll play against the Suns. Listed as questionable with the calf contusion, and then does not play. We've lost Cobb in the Google Meet. And so as Cobb gets back on, George, did I misrepresent the events there? Do I have the order correct? Sorry, now that, Cobb is back with us.
That sounds right. I'm not 100% sure on the timeline of before the Spurs game.
Correct.
I don't recall if he was ever probable or if that was purely a questionable into doubtful
correct.
Into out.
Right. So I know he was listed before both. I think I should say it this way. He was listed as questionable before both games.
Yes.
Then was downgraded and did not play.
That's 100% correct, for sure.
And to be clear, they have noted specifically on this one, calf contusion, not calf strain.
It's just ridiculous, the whole thing.
I guess this is the first question I would ask. Is this making too much out of it? Because I think at this point, to me, and I want to say, like, if I'm incorrect, I'm fine with that. This feels to me like it's starting to become a thing.
It's never not a thing. Like, unless you are in 100% perfect health as a member of the Memphis Grizzlies, like you're in a dire situation, apparently, right? Like, there's no such thing as playing through it.
Yeah, I think if you're a Memphis Grizzly, you're just pre on the injury report.
It's the most insane thing I've ever seen, and it's completely taken the life and the fun out of this season. Like, when you get beat at home by Dylan Brooks and Grayson Allen without seven of your nine best players on the floor, a couple of whom we still have not seen, by the way, Ty Jerome and Scottie Pippen Jr., like, weren't they supposed to be coming back by this point? Like, where the heck are they? I mean, I think Scotty,
when he got the surgery, I was like, okay, maybe All-Star break. I did think by January 1, we'd see Ty Jerome.
I mean, yeah, like, at this point, the only reason to turn the Grizzlies on right now is to, like, I don't know, maybe Cam Spencer will do something fun. You know, like, he hits a game winner the other night. Like, and that's you. That's when freaking Cam Spencer has become your glimmer of hope. Like, you're in a dire place, man. And, like, I did you see some of the things that Dylan Brooks said after the game last night?
Yeah. So let's talk about that, because I'm kind of two minds. One, I'm not saying I think the comments are always worthless. I do always consider the narrator when it's somebody that has left. I'm less interested, I think, to hear what they have to say, because I do think there's an axe to grind. It does not also mean, though, that I can't acknowledge that maybe there are some kernels of truth.
Mm-hmm. It's a whole lot different if the Grizzlies are thriving right now versus whatever it is that they're doing. Meanwhile, Dylan Brooks is having a career year. Phoenix, the team that you're trying to get a pick from, isn't nearly as bad as we all hoped they would be.
Oh, and, I mean, your only hope now is that your pick is bad.
I mean, which at this point, keep them on the injury list. At this point, you ain't going to do jack diddly squat in this West. Nothing. Zilch. I don't care if Zach, Ja come back. I've seen enough. This team ain't doing anything. So, like, I look at this draft, and I'm courtside watching Cam Boozer the other night. And you see what Darren Peterson does when he's healthy, but please do not take him because he's made of glass. Like, get into this.
Oh, that's a perfect Grizz pick.
Yeah, right. Like, exactly. Like, he'll slip to three or something because of injury concerns, and they'll take him, you know? Granted, the Grizzlies would still have a lot of losing to do before they would be in position to, you know, get a pick of that magnitude. But if you can't tell, Jeffrey, I'm annoyed.
Well, because I do think you've touched on something there. It does feel like we've gotten back to turning the game on feels like a chore.
Yeah. I was like, all right, I'm going to watch I'm gonna watch our Alabama Vandy with 60 something fouls last night, and that was a better watch than the Grizzlies, unfortunately.
How did Nate Oates not get kicked out?
He tried. He tried to get kicked out. He really did. That game was ugly, but it was entertaining nonetheless. And I mean, so I had an eye on the Grizzlies, but it never really felt like they had a chance. Which, why would you think they do, given the lineups that they've got out there? I mean, at this point, you know, like they've gotten so much more, unfortunately, out of Jock Landale than you ever would have imagined, right? Like, and it's just, I'm tired of seeing that guy play. Like, I'm sorry, you've done your job, you've done well, but like, I don't want to watch this team anymore.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the other part of it. It's not like I'm sitting here and pounding the chest saying, how could they lose this game? It was very obvious last night, like, quickly how that game was going to go. When you consider the injuries, you consider that they played the night before, the Suns did not, and the fact that the Grizzlies have got, like, they've caught a case of Tiger basketball. Like, they just are just turning it over.
Like, it's rough. It's rough, right?
It's gross.
So, I don't know. Is it more weird with Ja than it was 2 weeks ago? I actually feel to a certain degree as though, given where it looked like things might be going early on when he had the dust up with Isolo,
yeah,
like, from a morale standpoint, from an attitude standpoint, I'm not super worried. Now, the injury situation it's far more concerning. But at this point, it's like, what am I worried about? Like, because do I believe that Ja Morant coming back is going to turn the Grizzlies into a contender? No. Like, it's not like, oh, man, think about all the opportunity that we're missing by him not being out there. I'm like, whatever. Like, he's going to come back and play. Maybe they'll be 500-ish with him. But it's, you know, he's not, I'm sorry, like, the version of John Morant that we've gotten this season is not the ceiling changer, like, difference between competitor in the West versus a play-in team. Like, I don't think he's making that sort of a difference for them right now. So would you rather have him? Sure. Are the games better to watch with him? Usually, yes. But it doesn't feel like to me as though, oh, man, their season's slipping away because he's not playing. Because when you also have Cedric Howard banged up, and when you also have Jaren seemingly not playing his best, and Zach Edey's out, and your backup point guards are not playing, and I mean, you know, you could just keep on going down the list. Like, there's just so much more to it than Ja not being out there.
So I ask all the, is it weird, not simply because, okay, you got to have him out there. I'm wondering if this is expediting an exit.
Like, they just trying to make it worse because they know they want his value to be high? Is that, like, what you're insinuating?
What I'm actually interpreting is that I think they've actually expected him to play. That's a think. I need to be very clear. I think that the team has expected him to play, and he is not. And I think they were already, though they'll never say it publicly, I think they were already kind of fed up with all of it. I am wondering if this motivates them to part ways sooner. Because I kind of think I thought for like the last month or so, the most likely scenario is Ja would want an extension this summer. There's no way the Grizzlies are going to want to give him an extension this summer. Unless all of a sudden he plays, you know, 40 games the rest of the way and is an all-star again. If that happens, well, yeah, I think they will extend him, but I see no reason to believe that either of those things are going to happen. Yes, the value is bad, but I am almost just wondering at this point, like, if they just want addition by subtraction.
Well, basically, I mean, you saw it yesterday, like, Atlanta just bit the bullet eventually, you know, with Trae Young, really, for the sake of clearing.
I want to be clear. This is one of those things that I think it was coincidental. Did you notice last night when you were watching that Alabama Vandy game? Did you notice when the Grizzlies score would pop up in the final?
No.
So on the ESPN bottom line, It included the score with the player stats. And then just randomly out of nowhere, Grizzlies 10-8 without Ja Morant.
Is that true?
So they're 10-8 without Ja, which would imply what, they're 6-13 with him?
I didn't realize it was that. I mean,
last night without him, I think that brings them to 10-9. But yeah, they've had a winning record. I mean, we were looking at that with the broadcast on Wednesday. Or excuse me, Tuesday.
It was a weird stat that flashed up on the bottom line. I was like, that's out of nowhere.
That does feel weird to be on the ticker, though.
Like, that almost feels like the type of note you're like, did somebody send that in?
It sounds like the type of note, Jeffrey, that they got from a research packet that says, Grizzlies could trade Ja Morant. Here's what you need to know. And somebody who works the ticker was just looking through it and was like, huh, this could be good to throw on the ticker. Like, that the research is being done
now,
for an inevitable Ja Morant trade.
I should also note this. Over at ESPN.com, they have, like, their six trades that should be considered before the deadline. Not a single one of them has a whisper of Ja Morant.
Yeah, well, if it's being done, it's being done in a very clandestine fashion. And when the front office has made public remarks about it, they've been forceful in denying that they will look to trade Ja Morant. So something would have had to have changed within a fairly recent time frame, even since the Isolo incident early in the season, for them to now be looking to deal Ja Morant. But look, nobody's untouchable. Everybody's, you know, there's a price, right? So, like, but my deal, look what the Atlanta Hawks got for Trae Young. Previously a cornerstone of their franchise, still in his prime, a guy who took him to the Eastern Conference Finals, an all-star, the guy who they center their season ticket packages around. I mean, I could be describing Ja Morant, right? And they got basically nothing back. I mean, they got some future flexibility.
No, honestly, it felt like a win because a lot of the scuttlebutt earlier in the week when Shams announced multiple agents in his report that Trae Young was, or that they were going to seek a trade for Trae Young. That was a new one. Like, multiple agents in the trade proposal. Not like mentioning the agent after the deal. Like, there were multiple agencies listed in the pre-trade. So, like, that was a new one for me. But there was also the thought that Atlanta might have to attach one of their picks to get rid of him. It felt like a win simply because they were able to not include a pick, one of those first round picks that they have. But also, congrats to us. Do you realize this now means that CJ McCollum still has two more games against the Grizzlies?
The ultimate Grizz killer.
By the way, we looked it up. The stats bear it out. While his highest points per game against a team is not the Grizzlies, it's the second. He has scored more points against the Grizzlies than any other opponent in the NBA.
I bet his shooting percentage against the Grizzlies is.
Everything was like 10-15% better.
Yeah, that transcends multiple eras too.
Yes.
At this point,
decades.
Yeah. Wow. How about that? So I think when we have this discussion around Ja Morant and his future, I understand there's probably a significant appetite now among a certain faction of the fan base to see him dealt. My recommendation to you, though, would be to caution yourself for what you will get in return. Because if you're out here thinking that you're going to get four first-round picks and two young former lottery picks, you know, that's just not the case. Like, you're doing this to basically to clear space for you to build into the future. And that would be the return on a Ja Morant trade for the most part.
I totally agree with you on that. If you're someone that believes trade him to make the roster better, I don't think that trade exists. I am wondering this, though. Do they just not want it around anymore?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
because
he's
not a good leader. He's proven that. And if you've got young players that you're hopeful about, do you want that to be the biggest influence?
No, that's totally fair. They have given him chance after chance after chance after chance after chance. This could be mutually beneficial if it indeed goes this route. Like, it's just become so hard. This relationship has become so hard.
I don't even know if it can be mutually beneficial. I do see a world where it's beneficial to him. I think if you make the decision, it is solely based on you are tired of it and you do not think the positives outweigh the negatives. Because I also want to be clear on this. There is no player or asset that you're going to get back that will be as good as Ja Morant.
Well,
I mean, I guess maybe you could get an asset back that could get lucky in the lottery.
Yeah, but I mean, they are 10-9 without him, which I didn't even realize. And think about this, man. It's like, think about the exhale that you can finally take in that front office if Ja Morant were to leave. It would be sad. It would be disappointing that, like, the glory that you once imagined with him as your franchise centerpiece never materialized. But the weight, the burden of trying to make a unhappy marriage, like, work would be lifted. And I think that, there would the emotional sort of page turning that would signify would be significant. It's just become a very difficult relationship. I mean, and sometimes in life, like, you need to have difficult relationships. Sometimes you may not love your boss, but your boss makes you better. Maybe you don't love your sibling, but they challenge you in ways that make you better, right? And like, but that's not really what this is anymore. You know, this isn't really like a...
Jeff's always used the example, if you've ever had an addict in your life, it's a very similar relationship to having an addict in your life, that you just walk on eggshells. Oh, some days are good. You go through these massive emotional swings and you know, everyone's entire situation is dictated by the one person. So to me, the only positive you could have is you free yourself from that.
Yeah, I mean, there's something to be said for that.
Correct, but I also want to be very clear. I think there's a lot of people that believe basketball-wise it makes sense. I don't think there's much of an argument for the basketball perspective. I do think where there is the argument is the culture perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. But even still, even when Ja was at his zenith, like the best Ja that we saw, you remember he would miss games, and then we would have these stats afterwards like, wow, Tyus Jones played 33 minutes tonight, and the Grizzlies beat the Pacers, and now the Grizzlies are, you know, 14-9 without Ja Morant, and they're 16-8 with him.
So
you know,
the first year of Tyus, it was one of those. The first year where they went to the second round. So when they beat the Timberwolves, so what is that? The 21-22 season. The 21-22 season, they did have a very good record without him. It flipped the next year.
Yeah.
To where I mean, it was just kind of like even.
I think more than anything, you would miss the marketability of your franchise. You would miss the number of national TV games that you get. You would miss the ability to sell a season ticket package. Though at this point, you got to be out of your mind to buy a season ticket package to go see Ja Morant because he ain't playing.
I was going to say, if you're someone now that I want to be very clear. I understand people go, I want to go see Ja Morant and buy season tickets. But if you make that decision now, I have to ask, like, are you serious?
Yeah, right. And so that's the downside is like this is a small market team that struggles to fill its arena, and you've got a transcendent superstar with his own Nike shoe line. Well, you trade that away. When is that ever coming back? I mean, you could hope the lottery balls bounce your way again. But especially with the guard thing, I mean, I think they would be so hesitant to go down the road of a smaller guard. And for better or worse, those are some of the more marketable players out there. So, you know, you're never going to have, I mean, you got to resign yourself to that. If you do trade Ja Morant, you will probably in all likelihood go generation or two generations or three generations before you ever have a player of his visibility ever again. That's not nothing. When you're talking about the financial
name, we've had great players here. Anyone that has ever been in his realm of star.
I mean, he's got to be the city's biggest superstar since Elvis. I mean, am I crazy about that? Like, I don't know.
I mean, it kind of depends on how you view, like, Penny played in a different era where there was kind of the monoculture. I mean, Penny did have his own Nike ad campaign with Lil Penny. There's also the argument of he's from Memphis, but is that like it wasn't like he was playing in Memphis. You know what I mean? When he's at his zenith. So That's
well,
kind
he's
of
unequivocally a... the best of the 21st century in terms of a superstar in this city. I mean, look, and this is coming from somebody who witnessed Johnny Manziel's Memphis Express tenure in the flesh. Right?
Oh yeah.
So like,
Brandon,
I mean,
is our
there.
Quarterback. Remember when Singletary didn't even know the name of the kid that was playing Silver, the kid from Troy or wherever.
Oh right, yeah.
It was like Shivers or Shivers, something like that. Like, it was like Brendan or Brandon. Literally, Singletary didn't even know his name.
That kid could play a little bit. Don't think he ever got his NFL opportunity. R.I.P. to the Express. That was a
R.I.P. to the AAF.
Johnny Football, he would come and be courtside with Chandler Parsons. Man, those were the days. I probably had to write like 5 stories that year for the CA about Johnny Manziel. And golly, that was. And they would go to what's that bar? Newbies. They would go to Newbies and play ping pong and stuff. And
well, also Newbies is R.I.P. now. I don't know if you caught that news. That happened a few weeks ago.
Oh my! What is happening to the city of Memphis?
Our heads are falling off. It's just, it's awful. All right, let's talk about. Let's get more happy about the Grizzlies. Let's welcome Eric Hasseltine to the program next. We'll do that on Jeffrey Wright and Company. Stick around. You're listening to 92.9 FM. Yes.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
That music means we welcome the Memphis Grizzlies Radio Network play-by-play announcer to the program. He, of course, is Eric Hasseltine. Eric, I know we've had years where we've set the record on number of players rostered. We've obviously changed
the
things.
Not a record you want.
Correct.
Not a record you want to own, yeah.
Doesn't this also feel like a special year in terms of the guys that you want to see and the guys that you're counting on? Honestly, a lot of the guys that are probably going to determine how you make decisions about the roster, that to me is what has made this season so frustrating, is it's the number of guys that you were hoping to see and that you're hoping to make an evaluation on. They're out.
Yeah, you know, I go back to, I think it was the year that Mark got hurt, Mike got hurt, then Mario Chalmers got hurt, which is probably, for me, in terms of a Grizzlies player, the most gut-wrenching injury, because you knew Mario was in line to get a 4-year contract potentially, and all the rumors were pointing towards Brooklyn.
And the city the city had actually made peace with him to where the city had forgiven him for the shot, to the point where like everyone was like now like riding for him, and then he blows his Achilles.
Oh, yeah, in Boston, I can still see the play in my head. He took a top-of-the-arc three that he was a couple feet behind the line, came up short. He stepped back when it left his hands to get back defensively, realized it was short, tried to push forward, and dropped right there. And I was like, oh, my. Like, on the air, you know what it is, but you can't say it because you're not a doctor, and you can't play one on the radio because that's really bad. But that was gut-wrenching. That year was when they initially set the record for most guys rostered. And they end up making the playoffs, and that was the year where Greg Popovich eloquently put it. He goes, hey, look, you know, it's not their fault. They can't compete with what we have on our roster, with what they're bringing out night in, night out because of their injuries. It's just unfair. That team, before the injuries, was one of the best teams in the Western Conference, and because of that, they held on to a playoff spot. It's like it just wasn't a fair fight. And he wasn't wrong, and he wasn't being a jerk about it. He was being complimentary to the entire organization for piecing it together as best they could. And then you got to 2 years ago where Ja was out with a suspension and then played and then tore his labrum, and that's where you found guys like Gigi Jackson and Scottie Pippen Jr. That was a totally different scenario. That was, you're not going to be very good. Let's see what's out there that we may be able to invite back next year, or that's on our roster that we want to keep, or what's on our roster that we're willing to say goodbye to. And the Wizards, between the two stints for the Grizz, had broken the record because they were in the same boat. Their guys were all hurt. John Wall was out. They just started, hey, let's go pick this guy up. And we've seen him in, you know, G League games, and he looks pretty good. Let's see what he can do in the NBA. And you're just trying to figure it out. Right now, I think you're right. I think this is the toughest of all three of these injury plague, like massively injury plague seasons. They've all been somewhat injury plague because you haven't seen Ty Jerome, you haven't seen Scottie Pippen, you haven't seen Ja and Zach Edey together. You've not seen much of Ja. You've seen very little of Zach Edey. You get Brandon Clark back in two games, the second game in, he leaves 3 minutes into the game after looking solid in his first game back in Minnesota and was, to his own admission to me after the game, he was like it was a dream. He was so excited to be back. And you don't get to see that. And I tell people all the time, you take five of the top nine rotational players off of any team, and now maybe Cam Spencer moves himself into that list with what we've seen, but at the time, those were five of your top nine guys. Ty Jerome, Scottie Pippen Jr., Zach Edey, Brandon Clark, Ja Morant. You start the season, it's those five with Wells, Cowher, Jaren, and Santi are your top five. Jock Landale is your 10th. Cam Spencer, John Conchar, 11, 12. Down the list, Vince Williams is in there. Gigi Jackson's in there. And then Kentavious Caldwell-Pope's in there as well. So how it worked out, if you want to change the number, fine. But five guys that you were counting on that you expected to be key players in your rotation, not available for basically the entire year. So to me, although last night was a dud, and we all can admit why, I thought you said it best, they didn't have the same bounce in the legs as the Suns did. The Suns coming off a three-point loss where they nearly made a miraculous comeback to send it to overtime, the way they're playing, how they attack the ball. If you notice, if you were, and you were watching, the minute the Grizzlies crossed the timeline, there was a ball-pressured defender right up on the ball handlers, right up on everybody, even Cam. If you can get by us, good on you. We don't think you can. We don't think you're going to be able to do that. And early on, the Grizzlies hung in because Jaren was going right at Dylan Brooks, accepting the physicality. And I'll be honest with you, for whatever reason, they chose to change that out a little bit. They didn't go as hard into the post. And maybe that had a lot to do with Jaren being, you know, a game-time decision with an illness. He guts it out, and you only have so much juice left. And, I mean, to be honest with you, you hit Dylan Brooks six or seven times physically, and he hits back. It doesn't feel good. Dylan's a strong dude. Like, he hits you hard. You feel it when you've played him. So they've always taken the approach of long-term picture, and maybe they just realized, hey, this is going to be a uphill climb no matter what we do. Let's just work some kinks out and then try to get ready for Friday as best we can. So it's been tough. And then obviously the drama aside from that, with the things that have happened in the early part of the season, seemingly putting that to bed, but there seemingly is some frustration again. I don't know. I never like to look at social media posts from guys and try to speculate what they're thinking. We don't know what they're thinking. And so I know everybody was talking about Ja's social media last night to me, and I'm like, so what? They're like, no, you got to realize this is how these guys, like, say they're upset. And I'm like, what if it has nothing to do with basketball? What if this has something to do with his regular off-the-court life, and we don't know anything about it, and it's affecting him? Okay, great. You know, we have to remember these guys are human beings sometimes, too. You know, I remember an old closer for the Braves named Mark Wohlers.
Oh, yeah.
Came back after one off season after
sweaty hat. Dominant. Remember, he never washed his hat.
No, and I loved it. And he threw just bullets. I mean, just BBs, just pumping it over the plate. They found him in a tryout. He has this incredible amount of success. He comes back, and the guy couldn't walk it across home plate the next year. Like, could not throw a strike. John Rocker takes over. Comes out later in the year. Yeah, he's going through a divorce. Oh, that's not stressful at all. Anybody that's been through it knows it's one of the worst experiences of your life, especially if it's messy. And so who knows? Who knows what those social media posts were about? Speculate all you want. Call me naive for not thinking that it's part of the Grizzlies. I'm not saying it's not. I'm just saying we don't know. All I know is the guy did not play last night. And if he's not ready to play and they're looking long term and doesn't feel good to go and says that to the training staff, they can't consciously put him out there. They're not going to force him. No, you got to get out there and play. You don't feel good, go get out there and play. Guys have said, hey, I don't feel good, but I'm going to gut it out. See Richard Sherman. Kevin Durant with the strained Achilles or strained calf, whatever you want to call it now, gutting it out game six against Toronto. Bye, he's gone, or whatever, that series against Toronto before game six. It's not beneficial. And so obviously there's a lot of chatter. I heard, I was listening this morning because I'm enjoying kind of the final week of Jeff, and we'll touch on that maybe tomorrow or something. Maybe I'll call in. I don't know, because it's bittersweet. It's been fun to watch, but it, now with the Trae Young trade, now everybody's going, well, what do you do now? Are you in the market to do this? I think your point about ESPN not even having it as one of the six moves that we could see at the deadline says if it's being discussed, it is not being discussed and talked about by anybody. We started to hear about Trae Young being shopped a while ago, like earlier in the season. We haven't heard a word about Ja Morant being shopped. And I, whether that's because they have said no leaks on this one and they are talking about it, or because it's not happening, take your pick, believe what you want to believe. But you know, when
starts, I'd also add a third option out, I think a lot of those stories get written by agent leaks, and
yeah, of course.
The, you know what I mean, like I don't know if the Morant Enterprises is in that business.
Yeah, that's another factor. You know, it's, he decided to part ways with Mike Miller, and he's going to start this company where he's representing himself and athletes can represent themselves. And, you know, I know some of the people involved with it. I said, hey, I really hope it works.
Yeah.
I really do. I hope you guys set a trend that is the most beneficial thing for these guys. I'm a believer that agents help. But if you don't have, if you haven't had a good relationship with your agents or it's not working and you want to try it on your own, man, go for it. Like, I can't be upset about that. But I've seen guys do this before, and it's not, it ends up not working. Now, I also have seen it where guys basically said, look, the deal is the deal. I think it was Ray Allen.
I think SGA, like, I think he represents himself. Or, you know, like, yeah, like people around him, like, you know what I mean?
That's possible, because when you get to a certain level,
yeah,
in terms of your contract to play, you can't get more. Like, you can get, it's not enough to, like, say, to them, to warrant the fee that they're paying, where you have to have somebody that kind of understands the business and the marketing side of it is when you're talking about endorsements, is when you're talking about promoting an image, when you're talking about battling public perception that may be negative about a client. Agents have a skill of doing that. I've known many of them. And I've known ones that are really, really high level, and I've known ones that are just okay. And they still did right by their clients. The ones that are high level, I had a buddy that's a agent, was an agent for football players before he retired. His guys did really well because he knew the game and he understood how to take care of them. And it was kind of like, you know, Omar, I used to tease him. I'm like, you're like Jerry Maguire, not like Bob Sugar.
Yeah.
Because his clients, I'd go to dinner with him and then players on his stable, and it was just like going to dinner with two buddies. It wasn't going to dinner like a business dinner. And I've been at other ones with guys that aren't in the market that it's like sitting there and you're like, okay, do I have to finish my broccoli? Because it just feels like a parent-child relationship almost. So it's a weird game. And when you don't have that representation, the public image perception cleanup, it may be tougher, it may be easier. I don't know. Or you may not care what the public thinks. And that's entirely within these guys' rights, too. You know, I know the frustration coming about Ja and all the things people say, and he's not this and he's not that. And this guy's, if he does not want to interact with people outside the game of basketball or outside his stable, more power to you. Do I think it's costing you money on the back end? Probably. If you don't care about that, then do your thing. Be you. You got to live your life the way you want. It's like a coach or a front office, which, and you've heard me say this. They're the ones who get paid to make those decisions, and they have to live with the decisions. If you're a coach and you're paid to run a team the way you want to run it, you're the one who has to answer for it. Who am I to sit here and tell you, nah, this isn't the right way to do it, or this isn't the right guy to pick at this? You make the draft pick as a general manager, or you make a trade as a general manager, see, Nico Harrison, and it doesn't work. You have to answer for that. We just saw that in Dallas. Now, after the Trae Young thing, building on that, they're about to possibly move Anthony Davis. That will go down, if that happens and they don't end up with a whole lot in return that helps them, that will go down as the worst trade in professional sports history, if it isn't already that. Then it's unequivocally.
It's just because you don't see Anthony the vision, Davis, Eric. Out. Remember the vision? The vision. It's like,
yeah,
the vision. What?
Yeah, the vision.
You mean getting lucky in the lottery? That's the vision?
Yeah. Well, and then again, he has to answer for that trade, right? Now, anytime a job opens up, there's not a franchise on this planet that's going to look at it and go, yeah, why don't we give Nico a shot? He was misunderstood. That's a wrap. I hope your other avenues of having a career, or if you have enough money put away and you want to retire, whatever. Yeah, you may have to go back to doing what you did before that got you into that GM spot, but giving the keys to a team again, probably not going to happen. David Kahn went through that in Minnesota. So, yeah, it's to give a really long answer to your question about how tough this year is, there's so many factors involved. It is tough. But at the end of the day, it's one season, and you're going to have to fight through this turmoil and sludge that's kind of there right now, and you're still in a hunt for a spot in the postseason, whether that's play-in tournament or even higher if you get guys healthy and you start playing the type of basketball that they believe this roster could play. I don't think anybody believed they were going to be a title contender, but they believe they could still be very competitive at times, and they've shown that. Then, you know, let it roll. We're not even halfway through the season yet.
Eric, is it revisionist history to say that the Grizzlies should have handled the Dylan Brooks divorce a little differently? Because after a night like last night, you see a lot of that when he comes in and he's the leading scorer and they win a game by 20 points in Memphis. But I will also point out, it took him 22 shots to get his 21 points, which was kind of the whole impetus behind why it was time to move on from him in the first place.
Yeah, you can always look back at it. Here's what I know. And look, with Dylan Brooks, I remember going back to when he scored 20 or more, the Grizzlies were virtually unbeatable. And the wild thing was in those games back then, he was scoring 20 in like usually 15 or 16 shots at the most, because it was in the flow of the offense. He wasn't trying to create things on his own. He wasn't forcing issues. The nights where he kind of forced the issue, he didn't always score 20. It was more often he did not. And those were the nights where there was more of a struggle. Going back to that, you look at it, he wanted a certain amount of years and money. The Grizzlies were not willing to give the same amount of years from what I understand. The money was very close per year, but Dylan wanted the security of more years. And they said, if you think you can get it on the open market, go for it. And sometimes you have to make that hard decision. And lo and behold, Houston said, oh, yeah, we'll give it to him because we have a really, really young team and we have money to spend and we need a dog on defense. And, look, I'll tell you this. Whatever you want to believe about Dylan Brooks, know this for a fact. Every single person I know in the Houston Rockets organization, from broadcaster to working in, you know, the PR department to – people that are in their, you know, in their other decision-making places, they all said that was a hard pill to swallow to have to give him up to get Kevin Durant. That was a tough pill. It was tougher to swallow the pill for them to give up Dylan Brooks than it was Jalen Green. And at one point when Jalen Green came in the league, people thought this kid could win a scoring title. And they're not wrong. He can put the ball in the bucket. They felt like losing Dylan Brooks was tougher than losing Jalen Green. He gave that organization a lot, and they loved him. And the guys in Phoenix, same thing. They've gone through a complete overhaul. Their chemistry and their organizational structure is vastly different than it was with Mike Budenholzer and James Jones in the front office. James Jones goes on to the NBA offices, and Mike Budenholzer gets let go. It's a different time. I talked to their guys last night. It's a easygoing, everybody on board. It's a lot like it was when the Grizzlies first made that switch over to Taylor Jenkins. And so they're benefiting from that, and Dylan's a big part of that, and showing younger players, you know, the work ethic. There's one thing you could never doubt about Dylan Brooks when he was here. His work ethic was at the top of the charts. I mean, I had, you know, talks with coaches that were like, man, I love Dylan, but I really would like my phone not to ring at 11 o'clock because he watched tape for 2 hours and saw a little hitch in his shot and he wants to go over to the arena, turn on the lights and get up 100 shots. But you go do it because that's the kind of guy you want on your side. And so it can be revisionist history. I thought, in my own personal opinion at that time, he was embracing the Dylan, the villain moniker a little more than needed. And maybe it was him trying to play with that ultimate chip on his shoulder. Tell you what, the guy, if you doubt it, the guy's a winning basketball player. Everywhere he's been, since his early years with the Grizzlies and in his rookie season when they were banged up. Teams have won. If you look at Dylan Brooks' number of wins, it's going to outnumber the number of losses. And one of the big reasons why is the way he plays. And the rivalry was great. And Draymond Green saying they're relying on this guy to win a title. Good luck to him. It wasn't – Dylan was not the issue. Like, it may have been a little bit of, you know, again, trying to do too much at one point. But I think that as you go away from a situation, you grow up a little bit. And 4 years later, we're looking at Dylan Brooks going, that's a different dude than when he was here. And had a chance to catch up with him last night. I'm happy for his success. And I said, take it easy on us tonight. Well, I know you're not going to do that, but I would really appreciate it if you did. And, of course, he did not.
How long does it take you to make charts before every game now? Like, are you like,
as long as
do you just have to have Ross next to you and being like, hey, who actually is here tonight?
No, because we get that stuff. So here's the thing. My charts include everybody. And so, yeah, you know how this goes. I'll give away the secrets, I guess, a little bit. I have them on, like, I have every team on a separate file, and I go in and I update all the numbers and make sure all the vital stats are right. Because believe it or not, sometimes the roster is like, one day a guy's 6'7", and then he goes in for a physical and they remeasure him and he's 6'8". So they'll change it. So you just double check everything, read the game notes. It's still a process. And, but it's, yeah, the year where they set the record, it was a constant change. And you're like, all right, who's getting signed today?
Yeah.
And the last thing you want is, you know, is someone that you don't know on there. And it takes a minute, but this one is pretty simple. Like, you go through day to day, just put your time in. You know that you're a play-by-play guy.
Well, there's no, at least you can guarantee, maybe not guarantee, but you can basically with 99.9% certainty know that the information you're going to look up is correct. When you call high school football game, there's like a 97% chance that the information's incorrect.
I remember calling Christian Brothers football when I first got here for 2 seasons, and I would call athletic departments. I was like, hey, can I just at least get a roster from you?
It is amazing. Like, they will treat height and weight.
Question. For what? For what? What do you need a roster for?
For radio.
I'm doing the game on radio, and do you have stats? No. Okay. Do you have a two deep? No. Okay, awesome. And I'd come from doing Division II college football where we got that stuff, but there would always be a guy like, I'll never forget the year Western Oregon came to Davis, a rainy night in the valleys of Sacramento. The field gets muddy. Western Oregon had white jerseys with silver numbers. And mud.
You've never had a chance. No, yeah, you had no chance.
You had no clue. And I'm like, can someone just take a hose down there and spray these guys off for me, please? It was awesome. It was fun, though. We made a joke of it. But, you know, look, it's kind of fun, though, when you find these new guys. Like, you know, last night, Osu Igudora, and I think I call him Ogadoro a couple times just because it's such an awkward name. But reading their journeys, Dominic Barlow, who was playing – the other night where he started with San Antonio and then getting an opportunity. Now I'm blanking where he was. He's starting for, I think, Philadelphia. But seeing these guys and reading their path to the NBA, I enjoy that stuff. Like, it's easy to see, hey, Cooper Flagg, where'd he come from? Well, everybody knows he came from Maine. He went to Duke. He played 1 year. Great. But when you have like a Jordan Goodwin who played for the Grizzlies and you think, okay, this is where he's been, that stuff's fun for me. That's not work. I do that while I'm sitting around, you know, hollering at my 14-year-old to do his homework.
No,
dad's doing his.
It's insane. Like, to your point, some of these high schools treat height and weights like state secrets. Like,
it's unbelievable.
It's like, to a certain degree, it's like, stats, I get that. You may not, like, we have a great situation where Dax Torrey, our SID, we keep great.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.